Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And when the speaker asks me to apologize, what he is, on behalf of decorum, what he is really asking me to do is be silent when my community is facing bills that get us killed. He's asking me to be complicit in this legislature's eradication of our community, and I refuse to do so, and I will always refuse to do so.
Republican lawmakers in Montana have voted to punish the state's first and only openly transgender lawmaker, Zoe Zephyr, by banning her from the House floor after she spoke out against an anti-trans bill. She'll join us today from Montana, along with another Democratic lawmaker targeted by Republicans, Tennessee State Representative Justin Jones, who was expelled for protesting inaction on gun violence after last month's mass shooting at a Nashville school. Jones has been temporarily reinstated and met with President Biden at the White House this week.
We come here to say that the South will rise anew. We represent a new South, that is rising, and that if we can transform the South, we can transform this nation.
Then we look at President Biden's plan to send U.S. nuclear-armed submarines to South Korea.
At their summit yesterday, President Biden and President Yoon of South Korea made a very provocative announcement that the U.S. would be sending nuclear-armed submarines to the Korean Peninsula, the first time that the U.S. has had nuclear weapons in South Korea in 40 years. This comes at a very dangerous time. It's like throwing fuel into the fire and will provoke not only North Korea, but also China.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Biden administration's announced plans to open processing centers across Latin America where asylum seekers would have to request permission to come to the United States, blocking tens of thousands from seeking relief at the U.S.-Mexico border. The first processing centers will be located in Guatemala and Colombia. Migrants from Latin America and the Caribbean will be forced to journey to one of the nearest centers to start an asylum application or ask for refugee status to then be resettled to either the United States, Canada, or Spain. The U.S. has agreed to take in 20,000 refugees over the next two fiscal years, while doubling or tripling the rapid deportations of migrants who are deemed not eligible to enter the United States. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas and Secretary of State Antony Blinken laid out the sweeping measures Thursday, threatening migrants at the southern U.S. border with harsher consequences, including possible criminal charges. This is Mayorkas.
Beginning on May 12, we will place eligible individuals who arrive at our southern border in expedited removal proceedings. Those who arrive at our border and do not have a legal basis to stay will have made the journey, often having suffered horrific trauma and having paid their life savings to the smugglers, only to be quickly removed. They will be removed most often in a matter of days and just a few weeks.
This comes as the United States is preparing to lift the Trump-era Title 42 pandemic policy in May, which for the past 3 years has been used to expel some 2.7 million migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border without due process. Immigrant justice advocates have denounced the Biden administration for violating international law and enforcing policies similar to those pushed by Donald Trump. The new measures exclude migrants from Africa. Eleanor Acer of Human Rights First said in a statement, quote, the Biden administration should focus on measures like increasing refugee resettlement and regular pathways and abandon its plan to impose an asylum ban that would be a legal, moral, and political mistake, unquote. In Sudan, heavy explosions and gunfire continue to ring out across the capital, Khartoum, even after Sudan's army agreed to a 72-hour extension of a humanitarian ceasefire with the rival Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group. There are reports of fighting near Sudan's army headquarters, the presidential palace, and Khartoum's main airport. Residents report severe shortages of flour and other staple foods.
People are not thinking about anything except worrying about themselves, their families, and extended families. The situation now is that the food supplies are dwindling, and citizens will soon face a famine, or at least a crushing food crisis.
Even before fighting erupted between rival factions of Sudan's military government April 15th, a third of Sudan's 46 million people were dependent on humanitarian aid. Back in the United States, attacks on transgender rights continued Thursday as Republican lawmakers in Kansas overrode a veto by Democratic Governor Laura Kelly enacting the most sweeping bathroom law in the nation. The legislation bars trans people from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity in schools, locker rooms, prisons, domestic violence shelters, and rape crisis centers. In Nebraska, Democratic State Senator Megan Hunt is facing a conflict of interest investigation after a right-wing lawmaker complained she did not officially disclose she had a transgender child before voting against a bill banning gender-affirming care for minors. Senator Hunt blasted the probe as harassment. Meanwhile, in Montana, Republican Governor Greg Gianforte's own son, David, who's non-binary, lobbied his dad to reject a series of bills attacking the trans community, including restrictions on health care and banning drag shows. After headlines, we'll be joined by Montana's first and only openly transgender lawmaker, Zoe Zephyr, whom Republicans have barred from the House floor for speaking up for transgender rights. In reproductive rights news, near-total abortion bans failed to advance in two conservative-led states Thursday. South Carolina and Nebraska both narrowly defeated draconian anti-choice measures, allowing the procedure to remain legal until 22 weeks of pregnancy. Meanwhile, lawmakers in Vermont passed a bill Thursday further protecting access to abortion, including medication abortion, as well as gender-affirming health care by shielding providers from liability. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans filibustered to block ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment, which would codify gender equality in the Constitution. The measure was first introduced a century ago and passed 50 years ago, but has never been ratified, as conservative opponents have argued the deadline for ratification has expired. Ahead of Thursday's vote, women House Democrats marched to the Senate to demand their colleagues pass the ERA. Legal experts believe its ratification would have helped prevent mounting attacks on LGBTQ communities and reproductive rights. The Senate's voted to roll back emission standards for heavy-duty trucks set by the White House. Conservative West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin joined Republicans in Wednesday's 50-49 vote, setting up a veto by President Biden if the Republican-led House also passes the measure. This comes after environmental groups and some Democrats condemned Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm's endorsement of the Mountain Valley fracked gas pipeline earlier this week. Arizona Congressmember Raul Grijalva said in a statement, quote, "fully green lighting the pipeline will condemn Appalachian communities to generations of pollution and related health and safety issues while also doing nothing for our ambitious climate goals," he said. Protests demanding urgent action on the climate crisis have ramped up across the United States. On Thursday, a pair of protesters smeared red and black paint on a glass case housing artwork at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., demanding President Biden declare a climate emergency. This follows demonstrations earlier this week outside the offices of banking giants Citibank in New York and Wells Fargo in San Francisco. A new study titled Banking on Climate Chaos finds the world's largest private banks loaned $5.5 trillion to fossil fuel projects since nations signed the Paris Climate Agreement. On Tuesday, climate activists interrupted a talk by John Podesta, who heads the White House Office of Clean Energy Innovation and Implementation. They were demanding the Biden administration reverse its approval of ConocoPhillips' Willow Project in northern Alaska and act swiftly to end the use of fossil fuels.
Going down, you guys. You never needed fossil fuels. Y'all need to stop supporting it. You are going to be complacent to the destruction of Mother Earth and everyone's future.
I appreciate their passion. transition that gets to net zero by 2050.
Too late!
They have a point of view.
That is too late!
30 years?
That is too late!
The protest was organized by Climate Defiance, a new organization that's vowed to disrupt the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, D.C. this weekend. Former Vice President Mike Pence has appeared before the federal grand jury investigating Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. His testimony Thursday came a day after a federal appeals court rejected an emergency request to quash special counsel Jack Smith's subpoena of Pence by Trump's lawyers, who cited claims of executive privilege. Vice Media is canceling its award-winning show, Vice News Tonight, as part of the company's mass layoff of over 100 workers, including most of its audio team. Vice is the latest media outlet to cut jobs after BuzzFeed last week announced it's shutting down BuzzFeed News. Vice Union said on Twitter, quote, "These workers are suffering the consequences of years of poor decisions they played no part in." And the white woman whose discredited accusations led to the lynching death of black teenager Emmett Till in Mississippi 7 decades ago has died of cancer at the age of 88. It was 1955 when Carolyn Bryant Dunham accused Emmett Till of whistling at her in her store. That prompted Till's abduction, torture and murder. Dunham's husband and his half-brother were tried for the lynching and acquitted by an all-white jury. In 2007, Dunham confessed she had fabricated her claim, leading the FBI to reopen Till's case. But the Justice Department ended its investigation in 2021 without filing charges. Last year, a team searching for evidence in Emmett Till's case found an unserved warrant charging Dunham in his kidnapping. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Montana, where the Republican-controlled State House of Representatives voted Wednesday to censure the state's first and only openly transgender lawmaker, Zoe Zephyr, banning her from the House floor and forbidding her from speaking during floor sessions. Zephyr will only be able to cast votes remotely for the remainder of the legislative session. The move comes a week after Representative Zephyr delivered a searing condemnation of a bill that would ban gender-affirming health care for youth.
If you disallow the use of the medical care that is accepted by every major medical association, if you disallow that care and don't allow people to have access to that, the only therapy left is either A, meaningless, or B, conversion therapy, which is torture. If you are forcing a trans child to go through puberty when they are trans, that is tantamount to torture. And this body should be ashamed. And if you vote yes on this amendment and yes on this bill, if you vote yes on this bill and yes on these amendments, I hope the next time there's an invocation, when you bow your heads in prayer, you see the blood on your hands.
After this speech, Republican lawmakers in Montana moved to censure Zoe Zephyr. Ahead of a vote to ban her from the House floor, she addressed her fellow lawmakers again.
Today, I rise in defense of those constituents, of my community, and of democracy itself. Last week, I spoke on the governor's amendments to Senate Bill 99, which banned gender-affirming care. This was a bill that was one of many targeting the LGBTQ community in Montana. This legislature has systematically attacked that community. We have seen bills targeting our art forms, our books, our history, and our health care. And I rose up in defense of my community that day, speaking to harms that these bills bring and that I have firsthand experience knowing about. I have had friends who have taken their lives because of these bills. I have fielded calls from families in Montana, including one family whose trans teenager attempted to take her life while watching a hearing on one of the anti-trans bills. So when I rose up and said, "There is blood on your hands," I was not being hyperbolic. I was speaking to the real consequences of the votes that we as legislators take in this body. And when the speaker asks me to apologize, what he is, on behalf of Decorum, what he is really asking me to do is be silent when my community is facing bills that get us killed. He is asking me to be complicit in this legislature's eradication of our community, and I refuse to do so, and I will always refuse to do so.
That was State Representative Zoe Zephyr, Montana's first and only openly transgender lawmaker. The Republican-led Montana legislature has voted to ban her from the House floor and has forbid her from speaking there. Well, Zoe Zephyr is refusing to stay silent and joins us now from Montana's capital, Helena, Montana. Welcome to Democracy Now!, State Representative Zoe Zephyr. You represent Missoula, a place that's very close to my heart. My first college roommate was from Missoula. Her dad was the band leader at Hellgate High. Talk about what happened on the House floor and your response to the censure saying you cannot speak in the House of Representatives from the floor.
What we saw in the vote to censure me, it was inherently undemocratic. When the speaker had been refusing to recognize me for my comments on Senate Bill 99, he was taking away the voice of the Montanans who elected me to speak on their behalf. And when those community members showed up in protest and said, let her speak, and he gaveled them down, he was continuing that process of silencing the people who sent me there to represent them.
And talk about what this anti-trans bill is, why you so fiercely objected to it.
The bill we were looking at bans gender-affirming care for trans youth in the state of Montana. And that begins with something as simple as social transitioning. That's what the earliest form of gender-affirming care is, which is letting someone grow their hair out or cut it short, go by a different name, etc. And this bill banned the use of state property for advocating for anything like that. As you get older, it looks like going on puberty blockers. Again, and these this healthcare is done slowly, carefully, in conjunction with the child, the parent, endocrinologists, health practitioners, following best practices by every major medical association. And so when you're looking at bills that take that necessary care away, what you're looking at is things that make the conditions for trans people impossible in our state.
The motion to censure you was introduced by the Montana House Majority Leader, Representative Sue Vinton, a Republican from Billings, Montana. This is what she said about you Wednesday ahead of the vote.
Every member of a legislature is presumed to be the equal of each member, and each has rights that must be respected. The rights of the minority and the majority both must be protected. Freedom in this body involves obedience to all the rules of this body, including the rules of decorum. Monday, this body witnessed one of its members participating in conduct that disrupted and disturbed the orderly proceedings of this body. This member did not accede to the order of the speaker to come to order and finally to clear the floor, and instead encouraged the continuation of the disruption of this body.
Your response to Vinton's comments.
So when we talk about every member being equal to one another, it's important to note the way that they are applying the rules of decorum unequally. We have had legislators who have screamed in their clothing. We have legislators who insinuated that my very existence is somehow sexualizing children. And we objected in the moment, and then we moved on. Decorum rules weren't used. There were hearings where we begged the Republican chairs not to allow harmful, discriminatory language. And they said, a lot of people have a lot of opinions. We'll carry on. So what you're seeing here is a Republican-controlled legislature using a tool like decorum as a way to silence those who are holding them accountable for the very real harm that their bills bring.
Now, just understand what's happening to you right now. You were sitting in a hallway trying to work Thursday. You'd been banned from the House floor, and they tried to kick you out of the hallway as well. Can you talk about the Montana Freedom Caucus, which called for your immediate censure, who also deliberately misgendered you in a statement they wrote?
So, much like the unequal and hypocritical ways decorum has been enforced, I'm not surprised that the Freedom Caucus would misgender me in the same moment that they call for civility and discourse. It's a caucus that calls for limited government while simultaneously using government to take away necessary and life-saving health care for people in my community. And I sat down Thursday, I walked in and I said, I want to be as close to the people's house as I can be so I can speak to legislators so that even despite the fact that my voice and the voice of my constituents isn't allowed on the floor, I can do everything in my power to make sure their voice is heard.
Tell us about your decision, State Representative Zephyr, to run for office and the significance for you, with you being the only, the first transgender lawmaker in Montana.
So I testified last session and in 2021, and as I was testifying on a trans sports ban, I saw that the people listening on the panels didn't seem to want to hear. And then I watched votes on anti-trans legislation pass by a single vote. And I thought, I need to be in that room. You need representation in that room if you're ever going to be able to move the needle. And so I was happy to run, go through my community where I've lived and walked through and spend all of my time. And they were gracious enough to elect me. And I'm happy to serve in Montana alongside Representative S.J. Howell, who's the state's first non-binary representative.
So tell us about the other anti-trans and bills targeting the LGBTQ community that are going through the Montana legislature. And then talk about where the governor stands.
So we're seeing an array of bills targeting the LGBTQ community, and particularly the trans community. We've seen bills that are trying to ban our books under the guise of obscenity laws. We've seen bills that are trying to ban our art forms under the anti-drag laws. We've seen bills that tell students they're allowed to misgender people. We've seen bills that say trans people don't get healthcare, and even if they have access to healthcare, medical practitioners who don't want to provide it can just ignore you for any reason. And these bills, again, as I mentioned, began with the sports bans. And so we're seeing the moment people got a foot in the door saying, oh, trans equality has limitations, they put an asterisk on that. Soon as that got in, they started escalating the attacks, which is what we're seeing in Montana and across the country as well.
And Governor Gianforte, whose own son, David, is non-binary, who's lobbied his dad to reject the series of bills attacking the trans community?
You know, I have not had direct contact with the governor's office on these bills. I have spoke to folks in his staff about these bills and how they're harmful policy, how they hurt our community, and how, quite frankly, communities in Montana do not want this. And so one of the things it's important to remember is that trans people, we live lives full of joy. We walk through and are a part of our communities. And so whether you're working a day job in an office or you're the governor of the state of Montana, you are never far from someone who is trans or non-binary and worthy of love.
And let me ask you about what happened in Nebraska. Democratic State Senator Megan Hunt facing a so-called conflict of interest investigation after a right-wing lawmaker complained she didn't officially disclose that she had a transgender child before voting against a bill banning gender-affirming care for minors. She is saying that the probe is harassment.
I think that much like Tennessee, much like here, much like Representative Maury Turner in Oklahoma, what you're seeing is far-right legislatures are passing policies or bringing policies forward that are incredibly harmful, get marginalized communities hurt and killed, and those communities and the people that care about those communities are beginning to rise up and say, this isn't acceptable. This isn't something we can stand for, and we're holding them accountable to the real harm that these bills do. And obviously, the attacks on Senator Hunt are harassment. You wouldn't expect every time a bill on public education came up, someone to disclose that their child went to a public school. This is targeting a way, much like decorum was used against me, they are looking for processes and procedures in the rule book that they can use to justify silencing and targeting someone for standing up for vulnerable communities.
Montana State Representative Zoe Zephyr, we are going to break and then come back. And we're going to invite Justin Jones into this conversation. I am wondering if they decided to simply ban you from the floor, that's not hardly simply, but, and not expel you entirely, precisely of what happened to the Justins in Tennessee, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson of Memphis and Nashville, because they were reinstated by their communities. We'll be back with Democratic Montana State Representative Zoe Zephyr in a moment. We'll be joined by Tennessee State Representative Justin Jones. Stay with us.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to was green and the grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were young and a callow fellow. Try to remember.
Try to Remember by Harry Belafonte. He died at his home of congestive heart failure Tuesday here in New York at the age of 96. To see all of our interviews with him over the years, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. From Montana to Tennessee, we're speaking to lawmakers who've been expelled or silenced by their Republican colleagues. Joining us now in Washington, D.C., is Justin Jones. Earlier this month, a largely white Tennessee House of Representatives, with its heavily gerrymandered Republican supermajority, expelled Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, the two youngest black representatives in the Tennessee House. They stood accused of breaching House decorum for nonviolently protesting the chamber's inaction on gun violence in the wake of the March 27th mass school shooting at the Covenant School in Nashville, where 3 9-year-olds and 3 adults were killed. Days after being expelled, both Jones and Pearson were temporarily reinstated to their seats by local authorities. Earlier this week, the two Justins, along with Gloria Johnson, a white lawmaker who narrowly escaped being expelled, met with President Biden at the White House.
What the Republican legislature did was shocking, it was undemocratic, and it was without any precedent. But you turn it around very quickly. And look, we passed the most significant gun laws that have passed in 30 years, but there's more to do. You understand exactly what it's like. It's just tragic to see what's happening in your state in particular, in your city, but also across the country. And, you know, nothing's guaranteed about democracy. Every generation has to fight for it, and you all are doing just that.
After their meeting with the president, State Representative Justin Jones spoke outside the White House.
We lifted this issue above the partisan divide, that this is not left or right, but we talked to the president about how this is a moral issue, an issue of conscience, an issue in the South where we are trying to build multiracial democracy and challenge these extreme forces that, rather than passing an assault weapons ban, they assaulted our democracy, as we saw when we were expelled from the state legislature. And so we've talked to the president and vice president about why it's so critical for us to continue to lift up these movements in the South, to continue to lift up this multiracial movement of reconstruction that we're experiencing right now. We come here to say that the South will rise anew. We represent a new South that is rising, and that if we can transform the South, we can transform this nation. If we can get common sense gun laws passed in the South, we can get them passed in this nation. And so we hope that the national media will lift up what's happening in the South, because our people are pushing forward a new vision. And I think it's going to be a point where we are on the right side of history, and those who stand against us are not.
Well, Tennessee lawmaker Justin Jones is still in Washington, D.C., and is joining us from there now. We last spoke to you in Nashville, the city that you represent, actually still represent, even though you were expelled. Can you talk, Justin Jones, it's so great to have you back with us, about what it meant to be reinstated, and then what it meant to meet with President Biden, with Bernie Sanders, with the Black Caucus and others, and what you're calling for now?
Yes. Well, it's so good to be